America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you are listening to yet another exciting episode of Let's Weekend. I, of course, am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Logie, and Teresa Sammons. Acknowledge your existence to the world.
Good evening, everybody.
Hello.
Yes, they exist. Okay, holy shit, you guys. some things went down this week. Yeah, we thought last week was full of shit. Oh,
we
God,
could top
it just
the
got...
AHCA.
No, obviously there's no way we could top. No, we topped it. We topped it. And we're going to give you guys a little bit of a history lesson to go along with it, because some of the shit that's been going down here has started to bring back a sense of deja vu to a lot of folks who lived through it. And, well, you'll know what we mean when we get there. Of course, we're also going to be talking about the elections that happened in France. Trust us, we're pretty happy with the outcomes, and you'll hear why. John Oliver actually somehow managed to crash the FCC site again.
Yeah, well, FCC,
of course, we got
some
science.
Had a good thing to do with it.
Got some science news, including probably the single most well-preserved dinosaur that's ever been found. It actually turns out it's a new species of dinosaur.
Wow.
It actually was found back in, I believe, 96. But we'll tell you all about it. Of course, we also got Linkin Park to talk about. No, seriously. And, of course, some movie news to round it all out. This and more on yet another, let's be honest, infuriating episode of Let's Weekend. So, before we get down to the business, Bill, what have you been up to this week?
So I'm still going through Words of Radiance. I've got about 3 hours of the audiobook left. I'm at the stage now where, like, everything is happening at once. It's really exciting, and I kind of wish I could, like, be listening to it right now. But, yeah, I'll probably finish it after the show or sometime tomorrow. Yeah, it's a really, really good book. I highly recommend the series to anybody. So, yeah, get that shit. It's really good. I've also been listening to, I don't know if I've mentioned them before, a Quebec band, or at least they used to be, named Harmonium.
Yeah, you have.
Yeah. No, so they had a reissue of their 76 album, Leptad, last year, which I ended up picking up this week. And holy shit, is it ever good. It's some remark. The story behind the reissue is actually kind of fascinating because nobody thought it was actually ever going to happen. Because, they lost the original tapes, so they couldn't remaster it. Until somebody at the Toronto office of Sony Music was poking around doing inventory and ran across them. So they offered Serge Fiori and Louis Valois, two of the founders of Harmonium, if they wanted to do a remix of it, and they said, "Hell yes, we do," now they can actually get the album to sound the way they want it to. Because when the original mix was done, they were on tour, so they weren't involved with it.
That's a dick move.
Yeah, it's not really a dick move. It was like, it was that or delay the release of the album. So they decided, okay, just we'll trust the guys in Toronto to do it okay. And it came out fine. But it's basically a mix of prog rock and orchestra. In the original mix, the orchestra is a little bit too much in the forefront, much so that the rest of the band, and in particular Serge Fiori's vocals, kind of get lost. In the remix that they did, it's a lot more balanced, it's a lot more dynamic, the songs just feel a lot more alive. I highly, highly, highly encourage you to check out Libtad XL. It's some of the best prog rock you will ever hear, and it's in French.
Yeah, I'd be honest. The French probably do prog rock pretty much better than any other, you know, non-English speaking country.
Yeah, these guys.
So, are all right.
To that. And I also hate Windows. I just want to point that out.
Yeah, we got that.
Yeah.
Well, what happened this time?
Their little Dell computer that I have in the living room that I kind of use as a home theater PC decided that it was just going to blue screen for no apparent reason. At random. Yeah, so I don't know what's going on there. I'll have to check it out. I checked the RAM. There's nothing wrong there. Power supply seems fine. Hard drive seems fine. So I think it's probably just time for a fresh reinstall of Windows and get it up and running again.
Was this before or after this week's update?
It started before.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. That sucks.
Yeah. Well, it's not really doing much other than just running Kodi and Chrome, so it's not, you know, a huge issue, but it is annoying because that's what my mom uses to watch TV on because we don't have cable or anything, so yeah.
Would a Raspberry Pi do anything like that?
Probably, except for the...
Maybe not as well.
Yeah, well, it would be a lot more reliable, that's for sure.
Well, yeah.
Because it's not got Windows on it, but yeah, I tried Linux, and it's like, yeah, it don't like my Wi-Fi adapter, so it's like... It's like, yeah, do I really want to, you know, clone a Git repository, make the driver, and then have to redo that again every time there's a kernel update? No, I don't feel like doing that.
No.
Really do not feel like doing that. So I'll just be reformatting tomorrow and see what happens. And, yeah, so that's been my week of weirdness. How about you,
Pat? All right, well, what about you, Pat?
Well, since I finished up with the Trails in the Sky the Third review, my focus has immediately gone right back to Final Fantasy XIV. Just doing more Heavensward stuff, grinding out gear until Stormblood next month. Cannot wait. Still rolling with the diet. Feel better than I have in years. Not much else to say about that. Otherwise, just kind of looking forward to a good wave of fighting games we got coming up here in the next couple months.
Street
Fighter 2, Tekken 7, Injustice 2.
Which actually comes out in next week. So.
Yep. Don't remind me. It's going to put a hurt on my wallet, but I'll enjoy it.
Yeah, we're entering the part of the year where we have no more money. So,
yeah.
Oh my
actually,
God.
That's been this entire year, really.
It's true.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know what break you're thinking about.
Yeah,
I was standing next to a GameStop today, and it said they weren't open yet, and it said we have Switches in stock, and I'm like, God damn it.
No, you were thinking no about money. It.
There's no money for that.
Yeah.
I'll tell you guys why later.
Okay.
All right, so was that all?
Yeah.
Or Pat, yeah, okay. Teresa?
I've been playing Final Fantasy XIV as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And working on it. This weekend I'm hoping that I can find the parties that I need to finish up a couple of quests and move forward. I've been working on story mode of Bayonetta 2 and laughing my ass off whenever I get a chance to play it because it's just ridiculous.
That's pretty much the opus operandi for Bayonetta in general.
Yeah.
I just want to add, Teresa, if you haven't done the Praetorium yet, remember, Fi wanted to join us for that run, so...
Oh, no, I haven't. That's one that I'm waiting for. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah,
maybe we could knock that out after the show.
Yeah, maybe. Let me have a little caffeine.
Okay. Have a lot of caffeine.
Oh, jeez, dude, yeah. Yeah, a lot of caffeine. I'm really looking forward to moving further in the story, so...
I just love her whole character. Just
Yeah, she's amusing. But the way that she stands makes my hips hurt. I just, you know, it's like she's doing the pee-pee dance. And there's just no physical way for a woman to stand like that, which, of course, is the point.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm enjoying the story, so there's that. I've also been, I got the emulator going, which, of course, took like 5 minutes. And Fester's fucking quest. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I fucking loved that game as a kid.
You want to hear a weird story about that game?
Yeah.
The developers were in Japan. The guys who were designing the game were in America. So they had to actually go and fly over to tell them, hey, these are our ideas for what these levels should be. The other thing is the dev kits had a save states in them. They didn't know that wouldn't be in the actual game. They developed the game assuming there would be save states, but didn't know that when they actually put out the game, they weren't going to be there. So the game is designed for save states that don't exist.
That explains a lot.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Okay. Yes, it does. It does. Because I was pretty much yelling, fuck this game. Oh, my God. Fuck this game. Because I missed this when I was a kid. I think my brother played it, but I was probably off to college by then or something. He'd gotten it from a friend or something. We didn't even have an NES until way, way after the SNES came out. Or SNES, whatever you guys want to call it. We called it the C's. We liked it. Yeah, I've been playing that. And you know what? The old Xbox 360 controller works great. I had gotten, it's fine. I'd gotten an NES one or an NES knockoff one for Christmas. And I couldn't get the buttons to map. It was just being a pain. And so I just plugged in the other one, and there it went. It was done. It was good.
X input is a good thing.
You know? Exactly. So I've been playing Kingdom New Lands. I had set that down for a while. And I picked it back up, and I finally got to the end of the game, and that was good. And it got really laggy at the end. It was bad, like the last 15 minutes of the game. I don't know if it was because I had too many subjects or there was just too much going on the screen. There was too many coins. It was too much everything. And I already mentioned, like, every time I quit Kingdom New Lands, it throws an error and it says, you know, kingdom.exe has crashed. So you can't really exit the game normally. It's I don't know what happened with development on that game. So I don't know. But I'm still glad that I've been playing it, that we bought it. It was good. I'm still watching Little Britain. I think I told you guys that last week. Shit is great. Shit is great. I am absolutely in freaking stitches. The skits with Anthony Head just kill me. I love it. And Tom Baker doing the narration is, They had him rapping in one of the episodes. But you gotta like British humor, I suppose.
But I don't think that's a problem for any of us here.
No. I've been watching Blackadder too, but yeah, okay. Catching up with old stuff. There's no money for a Switch at all because we still have like a copay where Scott went to the emergency room and.
Oh yeah.
Like school registration fees are due, and they're like $125. And, oh yeah, my kid is going to play the oboe. You guys
realize? That shit don't cost a dollar.
No, you guys realize that we live in 1,008 square feet with 170 other units, and he's going to play an oboe?
The word is acoustics.
Holy shit. Yeah, holy crap ton of money. It's going to run me like $350 just to get a used one. So, but if I rented it, it would be $437. Exactly.
That's not better.
Yeah.
And Scott got rear-ended yesterday, so we'll
God
have
damn
to,
it.
I know it. We'll have to pony up for the copay on that. Yeah, his pretty little Scion got rear-ended, and it's going to be a bitch when they go to color match that. Because he's got some limited edition car. There was only 7,900 of them made, and it's lightning yellow. It's the Zeus Firebolt edition or something, or Thunderbolt edition. So, yeah, his car looks like shit. So, yeah, no Switch this summer, guys. No fucking way, unless I get a job or something.
Yeah.
Well, what about the insurance?
Well, the insurance will be fine. It's Geico to Geico, so it's just a matter of maybe trying to find a shop that'll fix it for the right amount. So, I don't know. I don't know. We got to file some shit with the state in order to get the accident report finalized or something.
I was just going to say, isn't that shit covered?
Yeah, yeah, it is. But I think we have a $500 deductible on that car, something like that. I don't know. It's not paid off, so we have a lower deductible. So, but not like mine, man. My deductible is ridiculous high. So I get cheap insurance. But yeah, it was because some ducks tried to cross the road during rush hour on a very busy street up here. And I didn't find
out. I can see that not going well.
Yeah.
No.
I thought everything went fine. Scott didn't say otherwise. We go to eat lunch with one of my friends on her damn birthday. We're sitting there eating sushi. And he drops the bomb that some of the ducklings didn't make it. And I'm like, God damn it. Oh, my God. Got crunched cars all over the place and the ducklings had already died before.
And crunched ducklings.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's why ducks have lots of babies. So, yeah. Yeah, the Switch would have been great. I would have loved to play in the new Mario Kart with the new stuff. With the double slots for items. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Just double the bullshit.
I guess. It's double the trash talking in this house. So that was my very long sorry what I've been doing this week. I've also been
all
doing
right, Chris.
A lot of nothing.
All right, Chris, what about you?
Well, Monday started off great with my car battery dying while I was waiting at the red light 40 feet away from where I was going.
Oh my God.
So I had to essentially turn on my blinkers and call AAA, and sitting on the one lane, at least going in the direction I was going, while people went around when they got cleared.
And honking at you.
No honking.
Well, that's good.
Just people obviously figuring out, well, this is fucked up for him, so
nobody just got go out around. And helped you push it?
Not until a cop came by like an hour later.
Oh my God. Shit, your phone
this whole
battery
errand,
is probably dead by
this
then.
This bit of errand would have been about a 30-minute trip. It took about 3 hours.
Oh, my God.
Literally, all I needed was a jump on the car. Called AAA. It took long enough just to get them to send somebody. Because I had a brain fart and forgot which street I was on. I could see the cross section at the intersection. Because obviously the sign is pointed at you. But the street I was particularly on is one I just forgot. I was literally like describing businesses that I could see. I was like, oh, here's the specific bank that I was going to, but here's also the Circle K. It's like, oh, there's Chris. Not many Circle Ks.
Chris, dude.
What?
Google Maps on your phone.
I was talking on the phone.
Put it on speaker!
I don't know. I don't. That's a level of bullshit I didn't want to deal with.
No, I can understand that.
Yeah.
So I got the order in with them to find one of the local places to help me get started. And they were like talking about having to actually tow me to a parking lot. It's like there's two within 40 feet of me. In either direction. I shouldn't have to get towed. Luckily, a cop came by and helped me get me off the road, at least. By kind of just letting the car coast backwards. But just making sure nobody... Because I was on a slight hill.
Oh.
So I just put it in neutral and kind of just held my foot on the brake and let go a little bit. But the also great thing is having power steering, I could barely steer. So I was like, oh, you're going to turn it, go back up into the park. And I was like, this steering wheel
you had to earn
very
it.
Much. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You did your arm day that day.
Yeah. And that was fun sitting there for like 35 minutes till the towing guy came. He was like, oh, we're going to tow you 3 miles. And like, no, you just got to jumpstart me. It's like, oh.
Okay.
And just did that, and basically I wasn't allowed to drive to the place I was going because I needed to. He's like, oh, you got to drive this for at least an hour. I was like, I'm not driving for an hour.
I'll just go
to a different bank so it's a longer drive. The great thing is apparently like restarting the battery caused some shit to go fuck up. So when I – one of the things he did was move the windows up and down just to double check the power. And so when I went to put up the one window, both of them went up. So it was being controlled by one knob. I was like, what the hell? And so I go to put it up, and the other one just falls.
Well, firstly, your battery shouldn't die when you're driving. That would be your alternator.
Yeah, but this battery's fucked up.
Well, yeah.
But I hadn't driven it for a few days, so I think that didn't help either.
Oh.
And having, like, your first go with after driving for a few days to be stopped at a red light for a few minutes is not... A great way to help it keep going. But yeah, it was a great sign for the week that was coming up as a our asshole of the week show.
Yeah.
Spreading the love this week.
Yeah, the car is fine now, but...
this Monday?
Hilarious.
Was this the Monday that was so fucking bad I went and bought myself fucking flowers?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure it was this Monday.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, and sort of the nice thing about when politics gets shitty is finding stuff that Lisa is able to say, yeah, this is shitty, huh? And so I decided to start watching Last Week Tonight, particularly their YouTube channel, and just watching the stuff they have on there. And John Oliver is great about saying, yeah, this is fucked up. This is how stupid politics is and how we're just kind of a hypocritical country. Mm-hmm. Constantly, we try to do things the right way, and there are obvious counters that just makes it fucked up. Like the episode about gerrymandering, which I learned that we pronounce gerrymandering wrong because it's named after a guy named Gary. Mm. That was 200 years ago.
GIF, GIF.
So, you know, if you think the GIF, GIF thing has been a big issue of late, we've been fucking it up for 200 years with gerrymandering.
oh my god!
Just pronouncing that name, because the whole thing is he designed a district that looked like a salamander. So I said, "Well, it's a gerrymander," and then we turned that into an actual term.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it looked like a salamander. That's great.
And he was talking about all the weird different districts. There's it's one that looks like earmuffs, or the way that connects these two. Different set of districts is this like road that goes under these overpasses. There's just like fields all around it.
Oh my god!
But the whole point of that district is it contains all the Latino voters in that area, whereas what's between it is a bunch of black people. So they try and set them up so that all the Latino voters will be able to vote for somebody that represents them.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of like a mix, like a lot of other districts are, but a lot of interesting stuff there. The one about the federal budget's great. The one about Ivanka and Jared Kushner about how they're just about how they're supposedly the moderate force in Trump's life is just stupid.
What's the age level on Last Week Tonight here? Adult.
Yeah, adult.
First.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I was assuming.
Call things fucked up if they are fucked up. He does not mince words.
Yeah.
It's just great, fun thing to watch, and I'm going to keep watching it. Yeah. I got to a weird episode where it's just a dancing zero over green screen. Because I guess he was taking a week off, so they just had the zebra dancing for like 23 minutes in front of green screen.
Yep.
And asked their fans to just cut it up and put it in front of stuff however they want.
Did you watch all 23 minutes?
No, I watched like 30 seconds. Like, what the fuck? I scrolled over the rest of the timeline. It's like, yeah, this just keeps going. This isn't like some joke. Which the video is actually titled Dancing Zebra Footage.
That's commitment for you.
Yes.
I bet that was one dehydrated zebra guy.
I hope he got paid well.
Yeah.
As for game stuff, I've been playing a lot of Defense Grid 2 this week. No particular reason why, but I decided to get back into that. And yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yes.
And the trophies are pretty easy. Most of them are just beat this stuff, use 100 of this tower, this tower, this tower, this tower.
Yeah.
And a lot of easy stuff. And yeah, been just enjoying it. Yeah, been enjoying it. Played some more Diablo 3. Just doing random stuff in there. Play some more Destiny, which they had a weird featured mission this week, which is for the story mission stuff, which doesn't have matchmaking. Like it really should. So I played it solo. It was on hard, but the mission, I died like 3 times, but it was actually pretty easy by the end because the end of it is kind of a boss fight with these 3 tough enemies. But if you do it right, it's real easy because their AI cannot navigate the terrain. So it's kind of these 2 upper levels that they walk up to and are supposed to jump across, but it takes them 2 attempts to get their 2 attempts at jumping to get their body in the right way that they can actually jump across. It looks really stupid when it's in action. I managed to take video of it. Let's see if I can find it. Yeah, this is like the last 2 minutes of that mission, which is just great because it's like your AI is not able to navigate your terrain. This is a major problem.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's fun stuff. What else did I put down for this week? Yeah, I've been doing a lot of YouTube stuff. Putting up, let's see, there's a Polybius video, which has been doing pretty well views-wise.
How is that game?
It's the Jeff Minter VR nightmare you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Where he does all the crazy stuff that you want, and you get to inject it directly into your eyes.
Now, is it VR exclusive?
No.
Okay.
But if you're gonna, if you're going to do the Jeff Minter thing, you might as well go all the way. It has warnings up front about epilepsy and all that, and it means it. It's not like other games that just give you a heads up just in case.
Of course, it's Polybius.
Yeah. Yeah. And apparently there are people that are mad that Jeff Minter is using the name of an urban legend game. It's like, it's Jeff Minter.
Yeah.
So point is he wants to just make weird things. He got inspired by a game that never existed.
Yeah.
And yeah, definitely people should check that out. The video's actually doing pretty well. I guess besides that random Zelda video that Dan Rib did, it's our top most viewed video in about 16 months.
Mm-hmm.
There's the link if you want to see it in action. But I also got a video of Puyo Puyo Tetris because I finally got that in for the Switch, which is pretty good and ridiculous.
Yeah,
I like it. All the Tetris characters are named after their Tetris piece. So there's S and T and L and J.
Hmm.
And I, and yeah, it's pretty nice. Apparently, it taps into Puyo Puyo lore that obviously we don't know about because hardly any of those games ever came out over here.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
But they apparently kept lore from those various games over the years in Japan.
Hmm.
And it's a bit weird, but it's kind of like your typical crossover thing where, oh, these Tetris people don't know what Puyo Puyo is. And so they meet up with the Puyo Puyo people who are like, I've never seen these blocks before. These aren't Puyos. This is weird. And anime happens. one of the cool things about that game is it has replays. And so you can go into the online replays and see how actually good people at Twitter or at Tetris are in that game. And their stuff looks like it's sped up twice two times fast. But well, that's regular speed. I was watching a video with like the number one player in the world and the number five player in the world, at least on the Switch version. And it was ridiculous. And I watched that replay in the video just to show it and show the sort of level of play that I'm not going to ever do.
How far in is that video?
I don't know how far it is.
Okay.
It is. I think you can scroll through it to the part where there's
part
of the names.
Yeah, it's around 22, 23 minutes.
Yeah.
Holy crap sticks.
Yeah, they're going so fast, it's ridiculous.
Oh my god.
And the other video I put up is for The Surge, which is coming out on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And we got an early code for it, and it's pretty cool. It's a sci-fi dystopian game designed like Souls games from the people that made Lords of the Fallen. Mm. And that's it's actually pretty cool. I don't think I can really say too much about it other than what's in the video, which is that it's pretty tough. It's not necessarily in the same way the Souls games are, where there's lots of like surprise characters or enemies. It's more that to get loot and scrap and such that you need to upgrade your items, you have to like specifically target parts of their body that you can sort of do in your little auto target. And you have to like do a finishing move on it to cut it off and potentially get like whatever loot or sort of crafting material you need, and which can lead to you sort of maybe getting lazy and not paying as much attention to the actual fight and trying to force your way through it and getting killed easily. But when you try to go get your stuff back, the cool thing they do is you get a timer for how long you have to get back there, but every time you kill an enemy, it extends it a little bit. So it sort of encourages you to keep fighting through guys to get back so you can keep that timer up. It's really smartly made. It may not be the greatest game in the world, but it's pretty well made to at least distinguish itself a bit from the other Souls games.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I just like the whole weird concept of it. Because the company that is at the center of this is named Creo, and they are at some point, like our ozone gets really bad, and they devise some way to shoot stuff into the atmosphere via rocket launches, and that apparently repairs it. That's a little bit weird. And they also come up with exosuits. And your guy is sort of going there to become a new employee. And he apparently wasn't expecting to get these this exosuits surgically screwed into his body in horrific ways. Or there's blood squirting.
That sounds like a problem.
Yeah. Seems like you don't do enough research about your employment.
Yeah.
Should have looked it up on Google first. These guys will horrifically disfigure you. But the weird thing is that when you start up, the guy that you are controlling is in a wheelchair. So this surgery gives him the ability to walk, which is it's neat because you got to sort of ride around in the wheelchair for a while. Like that's not something I was expecting at the beginning of this game. It's pretty cool. Look forward to playing some more of it. And if you want to see me die a lot, watch that video.
Cool.
I died plenty of it just doing stupid stuff. That's been mostly it.
Yeah, I'm watching these Polybius videos on the PlayStation Store. They really got their money's worth out of that epilepsy warning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There, at the end of each section is like a bit where you're going through these cow horns, and colors just start flashing as you go through them.
Mm-hmm.
And There's lots of weird voice samples. I just start saying a lot of them, repeating them in the video. Just like, this has just gone weird. It starts talking about fried eggs. There's a bit where you're like in the Star Wars trench run with wireframe X-Wings flying through it. You kind of control it, wireframe X-Wing.
Wait, where's fried eggs coming in?
This is Jeff Minter.
Jeff Minter, and it's Polybius. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There are sort of sprites of llamas and cows and
llama dog.
Weird things that he throws into his games.
Yeah.
It looks right up my alley, though.
Oh, I see the cow. That's great.
Every time you get to the end of the section thing, you can look to the left and right and see VR cows just hanging out.
Yep.
It's pretty ridiculous and exactly what you want out of Jeff Minter VR game.
Hmm.
It's sort of like a culmination of everything he's made previously.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's my turn. Currently, I have downloading on my PS4 Utara Re Romano, which is the first. I think it's the first time we've had like a ported installment of this particular game fully translated series,
Atlas.
Anyway. Yeah, and basically, what it is it's a visual novel slash strategy RPG. So, you know, kind of like Sakura Wars, except not. I'll give that a shot. In the meantime, I've started up my Persona 5 New Game Plus.
Nice.
I don't expect I'm going to be getting rid of that game for a while. Great thing, though, about the New Game Plus is that you basically get to carry over a lot of the stuff that you finish with in your first playthrough. So you can actually access more content in the game.
Your social links carry over, or is that start over?
Would doubt.
No. Social links carry over. I don't think the social links carry over, but a lot of your other stuff does.
Okay.
I imagine there's a large subset of players who would not want their social links to carry over.
Yeah. And as I said last time, for those of you who are getting toward, who are playing Persona 5 and you're wondering, why does Igor sound so weird? Well, there's a reason for that. It's actually pretty awesome. So I'm doing that. And of course, you know, I still got Shine S and other stuff with me too. So, let's see. Oh, yeah, I've also been reading a lot, as usual. I've got the first two volumes of the original No Game, No Life light novel series by Yu Kamiya. For those of you who don't know, Yu Kamiya is, you know, he's pretty much the one guy I know of, at least recently, who actually illustrates his own light novels. Because he started off originally as a manga artist, and then he kind of had to become an illustrator for health reasons, and then he came up with the idea for No Game, No Life, and originally it was going to be a manga series where he just, you know, provided the scenario and someone else did the artwork, but he decided to just make it a novel series that he also illustrates. And basically what it is, it's about these two, let's just say complicated individuals, a brother and his younger sister, who are basically hikikomori. They don't really go out much, and they basically spend most of their time inside playing video games. They, you know, it's fairly obvious that his little sister, by the way, their names are Sora and Shiro. Sora is the brother, Shiro is the sister. It's kind of obvious that Shiro has some kind of developmental disorder. Her speech patterns and her mannerisms. And basically what happens is they end up managing to beat this random dude over the internet at an internet chess game. And the guy basically tells him, "Is like, do you ever feel like you were born in the wrong world?" And you know, they're just thinking it's a joke. He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "Well, guess what? I can take you somewhere." And suddenly they end up in a place called Disborg, which is a world where the reigning deity has decreed that all conflicts, well, all types of violence and exploitation, et cetera, have been banned, and all conflicts will be decided through games. So, like, when they first get there, there's a card game going over that into a – there's a card game that's happening inside this tavern they show up in, and the game is actually over who is going to take over the throne for the recently deceased king. And it just kind of goes off from there. It is – it's very, very Japanese with all that entails. But it is fun. It is very – it's a lot of fun. Let's see. Oh, and also just last night I finished Josh Malerman's novel Bird Box, which is basically a horror novel that's kind of like a riff on Stephen King's The Mist, except better. and I don't want to spoil it. Just look it up yourself. It's pretty intense shit. And as far as anime goes, yeah, I finished Angel Beats.
Well, you're still here, so I guess
it finished you.
Yeah. And yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It happened. It happened.
That's how that's gonna go.
It just that's all I gotta say. Like, look, if you've watched Angel Beats, you know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
That last episode basically rips your heart out, throws it down, and then stomps it into the pavement. And, but yeah, damn, that for a 13-episode show, that was really good.
Yep.
It's
nice to be able to just sit down and enjoy a good soul-crushing anime every now and again.
Yeah. That's what Clannad is for.
Oh my god. Yeah. We still haven't watched all of After Story. I don't know if I can handle it.
I don't think you may want to avoid like the last 5 episodes of that series. because god, it is like just 3 solid hours of just despair.
Oh my god. Okay, well, we won't watch it in winter when it's, you know, depressing outside.
Yeah.
Oh my
but
God.
It does have a happy ending, so granted, the happy ending is kind of bullshit. This is a key anime we're talking about.
Yeah,
well,
they're like the masters of. They're like the masters of, you know, reaching down between their cheeks and ripping a happy ending right out of their asses. You know what I'm saying? So. Now that that's over, I've decided I'm going to go and start watching one of the kings of all anime, wait for it, Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Hell
you
yeah.
Haven't watched it yet?
I have watched bits and pieces of it in the past, but never the entire series.
Oh, yeah, you're in for interesting times.
Not really. I kind of already know how it...
Well, don't tell
well,
me...
Well, I mean, I say... I mean, I already kind of know how the thing supposedly ends, but then again, that show is, like, over, what, like, 20 years old now?
Yeah. Yeah,
but,
so it's kind of impossible not to know.
Do you know how the movies work into it?
Yeah, I do. I know how the end of Evangelion works into it.
Okay, so you know it's a replacement for the last couple episodes.
Well, sort of like a supplement.
Well, no, they're like
but, yeah.
Presented as the episodes.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, so Evangelion, it is one of those shows that, you know, back in the day was like the shit. And these days, because of hype backlash, it's one of those anime you either love or hate with a passion. Oh, I do too, but
it
can
there.
Be a little pretentious at times.
Well, yeah, it's Anno.
Yeah. All right.
Go for broke.
So, yeah. So, that's it for me. Have anybody got anything else they want to add?
Not really.
All right. Well, then, it's time, once again, for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And this time, since we're going to be talking about political scandals, I thought I'd talk just a little bit, sort of a bit of a quick history lesson about what up until Watergate was the biggest political scandal in American history. And you'll actually look at it and probably shake your head in disbelief because this kind of shit is kind of par for the course now. But back in the day, it was a national outrage. It's a little thing that happened back in 1921 and 1922 during the president of Warren G. Harding. It was called the Teapot Dome Scandal. Basically what it was is it was a bribery incident. That's right, a bribery incident. Just one.
Involving a teapot.
No, it was actually – well, I'll tell you. It was specifically – okay, so this is what it was. Harding's Secretary of the Interior, a man by the name of Albert Bacon Fall, had leased a few preserves of what at the time were called Navy Petroleum. These were oil fields that were more or less state-owned. They were oil field reserves, more or less state-owned, specifically in name mostly to be used by the Navy. That's why they're called Navy Petroleum. This series of petroleum reserves happened to be located or in and around an area known as the Teapot Dome, which was in Wyoming. There was also two other locations that were in California. It's also known as a Teapot Rock. For those who are curious, this is actually what it looks like right here. What it was is, it was, like I said, it was a series of oil reserves. And what happened is that Albert Bacon Fall got caught trying to lease these, again, state-owned petroleum reserves to a couple of private oil companies at low rates without any competitive bidding. Then in late 1922 and early 1923, the leases became the subject of a public investigation by Senator Thomas J. Walsh that actually became a massive, like, media firestorm, you know, by, you know, 1920 standards. Eventually what happened is that Fall would be convicted of accepting bribes from the oil companies, and he literally became the first presidential cabinet member in American history to go to jail. No one who supposedly paid the bribes was ever actually convicted. Now, the thing you also have to remember about this is that President Warren G. Harding himself had already been kind of going through a bit of bad publicity already. He had basically mishandled, in 1922, what at that point had been the biggest nationwide strike in history, which was the Great Railroad Strike of 1922. And, you know, he eventually stepped in and negotiated to end the strike after it collapsed and basically did little or nothing to help benefit the strikers. Then, when the World War Adjusted Compensation Act, which or known also known as the Bonus Bill, voted on by both the House and the Senate, he vetoed it. Yeah, he vetoed the bonuses for World War I veterans. So he was a special kind of asshole.
That's yes. Like political suicide.
And then, finally, after one of the oil operators had found out that one of the oil operators who actually worked for the Navy Petroleum in Wyoming found out what was happening, he actually sent letter to Senator John B. Kendrick, which basically sort of was the first sort of shot fired. Eventually, since Senator Kendrick didn't respond, he then introduced a resolution calling for an investigation. This went into this long-ass investigation specifically headed by Democrat Congressman Thomas J. Walsh of Montana. Harding, by the way, was a Republican. Yeah, I think he was. Was he a Republican? Let me check. Because, you know, the political parties were kind of topsy-turvy compared to what they were back then. Yeah, he was a Republican. All right.
Okay.
This would go on from well into the rest of 1922 into early 1923. Finally, it basically finally was what wrecked Harding's political reputation, and he basically, let's see, he was the 29th president. He was actually in office for only 2 years before he resigned. And he was succeeded by his vice president, Calvin Coolidge. So, yeah.
That seems kind of minor compared to today, because that shit just kind of happens now.
Yeah. He resigned, and then, he also died that year, too. So that also kind of, he actually died before any justice could be put before him. So, well, unfortunately, the bastard got off easy. But the point is,
he ended up with the ultimate justice anyway, so.
Yeah. So here's the point. The type of shit that got Mr. Fall in trouble and basically wrecked Harding's political reputation is actually more or less commonplace today. So if you want to know, just want to shake your head and just think, good God, how far the mighty have fallen. Well, there you go. Now for the fun part. That was Brandon's random factoid. All right, here we go. Assholes of the week. It was.
Blitz.
Yeah.
Very plural.
It was. Yep, it was Donald Trump and the GOP. All right, here we go. So, as everybody knows, Michael Flynn, of course, was let go when it was revealed, you know, his Russian ties. Mm-hmm. Okay, everybody knows that. Then it was revealed that apparently Barack Obama had warned Trump ahead of time against hiring him. Things like, dude, don't do it. That dude is crooked as hell. You don't want to get involved. Yeah, Trump ignored him.
But he was a good guy for trying.
Yeah. Oh, but it gets better. All right, it gets better. So, after that happened, GOP Representative Raul Labrador from what state is that? Idaho or Iowa?
Iowa.
Yeah, IA is Iowa.
Yeah.
Iowa. Okay. He was doing a town hall. We already know where this is going. And one of the constituents gets up and basically says, by taking away Medicare, you're basically condemning people to die because they don't have access to Medicare. He then basically turns around and says, nobody, literally, and I'm stating this verbatim, nobody dies because they don't have health care.
Unfathomable stupidity.
Yeah,
I sort of get the gist that you could go to the emergency room and get help, but
no.
There are plenty of people that don't even want to do that because they know the bills that they will rack up.
That's not even how the emergency room works. You go to the emergency room and you get stabilized and you get kicked the hell out.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
That was also part of the Jimmy Kimmel stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
Where Newt Gingrich.
There is such a thing as aftercare, douchebag.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Kimmel was talking about all the appointments he's had to go to, sort of paying for the ambulance, cause sometimes they have to transport the baby that way, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He voted for this.
Mm-hmm. And he probably didn't even read the goddamn thing.
Yeah. was more than one page, so why would you?
Yeah. And we thought, oh, God, it can't get any worse than this. It just cannot get any worse than this. And then...
hold my beer.
Yep, Trump said, wait, you hold my beer. And then he fucking fired James Comey, the guy who was investigating the Trump administration for Russian ties.
Mm-hmm. And mentions now, in the letter that he was told 3 times that he was not being investigated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he fired him anyway. Because...
yeah, and he fired him, according to the letter, because of the way he treated Hillary.
Oh, now they care about Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now they give a shit about Hillary.
Mm-hmm. But her emails.
I like that he, in the one letter, mentions that he received letters from the Attorney General and the Deputy mm-hmm. Attorney General recommending that he fire him, one of whom said he was recusing himself from the Russia investigation. You know,
yeah, that was Jeff
Sessions.
They
fired the head of the Russian investigation. Great going there.
This is basically the third person who has been investigating Trump that's been fired in less than 3 months. So
that's called obstruction.
And Hillary was the crooked one, I seem to recall from chance.
Just add that to the long list of projections.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. But I pretty much said on Facebook, folks, start your clocks, because that's basically the final nail in the coffin right there.
And the great thing about this whole thing is the GOP came out with kind of a unified strategy of saying, well, you guys didn't like Comey either. You should be happy. It's like, no, they're critical that you do that so that the person hopefully learns and grows from it.
Yeah.
Not, we should fire you because we have problems with you. But he found a
tweet it is not in any way cognitive dissonance to dislike James Comey because the way he mishandled Hillary's emails, and then also criticize him firing it from what is a very obvious conflict of interest from the president.
Yep.
You know, this isn't an all or nothing game here. God damn it, there's such a thing as nuance.
Yeah.
Nuance?
Yeah, you're talking about the party of cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
It's true.
And then Trump invited a group of Russian photographers into the Oval Office with no U.S. press present. I will admit, as far as this, pretty much no matter what you say about this, it comes off as a little shady as hell. And unfortunately, there really is no way he can make this look good. If this happened and they tried to keep it hidden, people would say, well, then, that's just they're talking about collusion. But then he reveals it public, and it's like motherfucker. And there's just no way to make this look good.
Yeah.
It's a turd all the way around.
Yeah, meeting with one of the ambassadors that kicked off the whole Russian stuff with Kislyak.
Yeah,
he was there.
Yeah.
The only way we found out is that their Russian photographers posted to their state media accounts.
Yep.
So the U.S. press found out via the Russians. Told us, hey, we're in the Oval Office.
Yeah.
And here's
was that the same diplomat when he was giving the conference and he was they told him that, you know, James Comey had been fired. He's like, they fired him? You're kidding.
The other guy, Lavrov?
Yeah, I think that was Lavrov.
Kislyak is the guy that met with Sessions and various others on the Trump team.
This picture with all of the photojournalists on ladders peering over a hedge, this is how our press is treated?
Yep.
And this isn't the first time they've been excluded.
Nope.
Fucking
awful.
Then, right. Oh boy, it just gets better.
Yep.
future ex White House speaker, Sean Spicer, basically tried to avoid the talking to the press when he ducked into some bushes after the firing was announced. So he could avoid talking to people.
Yeah, this great fits here. After Spicer spent several minutes hidden in the bushes behind these sets, Janet Montesi, an executive assistant in the press office, emerged and told reporters that Spicer would answer some questions as long as he was not filmed doing so. Spicer then emerged. Quote, "Just turn the lights off. Turn the lights off," he ordered. "We'll take care of this. Can you just turn that light off?" Spicer got his wish and was soon standing in near darkness between two tall hedges, with more than a dozen reporters closely gathered around him. For 10 minutes, he responded to a flurry of questions, vacillating between lighthearted asides and clear frustration with getting the same questions over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So,
as a great editor's note on this, this story has been updated to more precisely describe White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer's location late Tuesday night in the minutes before he briefed reporters. Spicer huddled with his staff among bushes near television sets on the White House grounds, not in the bushes, as the story originally stated.
Did he have red eyes from blazing, from crying? Did he get punched? What the frick is going on?
But this is all happening when Melissa McCarthy is hosting SNL this week.
Yep.
She was seen driving the
her
mobile podium down the streets of New York for one of their, I'm guessing, cold opens.
Mm-hmm. In costume.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So there's people in New York just taking video of Melissa McCarthy driving down the street.
Oh, God.
You know, if we have to...
All right, and then... keep going.
Oh, if we have to put up with this shit, I want Melissa spicy.
Oh, yeah.
That is my condition. We cannot have this freaking administration without Melissa doing spicy.
They did a great promo of her going into the makeup room, coming out as spicy and dancing around.
I watched that tonight. That was awesome.
They couldn't have timed that any better.
Yeah. Well, like Spicy couldn't have timed his escapades worse.
Yeah. All right. All right. And then. Oh, it keeps going, folks.
And then. Hey, wait. From Dude, Where's My Car? And then,
all right, Representative MacArthur, who, those of you don't know, he was one of the guys who basically managed to get the ACHA to go through the House of Representatives, you know, passing by just 4 votes.
Yeah, with the MacArthur
he's one of those douchebags. Yeah, the MacArthur Amendment. Did a town hall, and he basically got ripped to shreds.
Especially with one guy that basically yelled at him for about... They got 2 minutes and 14-second video here. It goes on longer than that, but he basically gets to the point where he says, "You have been the single greatest threat to my family." Talks about his wife had cancer, managed to survive, but still worries about every ache as being the return of cancer, and how their kids are born with issues as well, so they have pre-existing conditions. And now this bill is aimed squarely at making sure they can't afford their health care.
Yeah.
I swear, at some point, one of these motherfuckers is going to get punched.
Yep.
During one of these town halls.
No, man. That's good. Pat's right. It's going to be at least punched.
Yep.
Yeah.
The good thing
then,
about... Well, this thing, he managed to do about 5 hours of this, getting yelled at people.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, I gotta give him that. He's got balls.
And finally.
And this is probably the more recent. A political consulting firm for the Republicans located in Annapolis. And where is that?
Maryland.
In Annapolis, Maryland, was raided by the FBI. Now, supposedly this is related to a thing that happened back in 2013, 2014.
Yeah.
But
still doesn't look good.
Yeah, it could not be timed worse. Honestly. So honestly, this doesn't really have much, at least as far as we know, it doesn't really have anything to do with the rest of this. But it's a very bad time for this to go public.
Yeah.
Just in general.
Yeah.
This wasn't even all of it.
No.
We actually had to cut some stuff.
There's still Trump's lawyers who claim they've looked at his taxes. Yeah. So there's nothing there, but the firm that Trump uses has branches in, guess where? Russia. Mm-hmm. Where they're recognized as one of the top firms in Russia. You could make this up Russia. If you were SNL.
And then actually, won like the Russia and so-and-so of the Year Award.
Mm. Yeah.
And then, and of course, Trump basically threatened to not just end, the press briefings, because apparently his spokespeople just suck.
Yeah.
And of course, earlier today, he basically kind of sort of did, but not really, but totally did, kind of blackmail James Comey on Twitter, or at least threatened it.
Mm. Yeah, and there was all of his stooges going out on morning TV and just saying the dumbest things.
Yeah.
But that's every day, though. So.
Yeah.
In fact, going on Kellyanne Conway, going on Anderson Cooper, and Anderson just basically, if he rolled his eyes any harder than he did, they would fall out of his head.
We could harness the energy from his eye rolling, and it would be, Big Oil would be gone.
Yeah.
Very least you'd be able to charge your phone with it.
But
it's nice to see a new face, Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Yeah.
And she
sucks just as bad.
She's even more pretentious than Sean Spicer, which is an amazing feat.
Yeah. Well, she's Mike Huckabee's daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah, gathering as much.
But we did have a hero or two come out of this. Specifically, Sally Yates, who basically went before the GOP during the, it was a congressional hearing?
I think it was the Senate Intelligence Committee.
Yeah, and she basically gave them all severe burns.
Yeah, Ted Cruz was going on about the statute, reading it to her that supposedly says she's not allowed to do her thing, and she recited her own that says she is.
Yeah.
And basically, he never asked another question again.
Yeah, because he absolutely thought that was going to be like a slam dunk,
she just turned it
right around and shoved it in his face, and he was like a hurt little puppy throughout the it deflated his ego. That's how you deflate an ego in a minute and a half.
Yeah, there was another guy that asked, I think it was about her, how could she defy the president? And she's like, well, I remember back when I was confirmed for this position, you and your colleagues specifically asked me if I would be willing to be able to say no to the president. And I said back then,
We've got it on video, by the way.
Yeah, there's somebody that specifically cut from that to the video of her confirmation hearing where she answered the exact same question. But because that was about Obama, it was okay to say no to the president. Mm-hmm. It's Trump. It's not. The walking.
Yes, folks, they really do think we're that stupid.
Yeah.
Then Al Franken basically summarized the whole thing, the Russian thing, how Flynn got paid by Russians, appeared on Russian Today, and all this stuff. It's basically a huge danger to this republic. And Esther, his question was, do you agree? She's like, I'm not touching that.
I'm not touching that with a 30-foot pole. Oh, also, yeah, so she's our primary hero of the week. We also have the students of Bethune-Cookman, who the graduating students, who basically booed and turned their back on Betsy DeVos, who was DeVos, I don't know how the hell you're supposed to pronounce her name, DeVos, who was supposed to be the commencement speaker. You know, the woman who is the Christian fundamentalist, billionaire, school privatizer zealot, who made all of her riches from both a pyramid scheme / religious cult and a mercenary death squad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially going to a historically black college.
Yep.
You know, a bunch of people that fully understand what's going on in the White House right now that is not aimed in their favor at all.
Yep.
They don't want to sit here and salute one of the dumbest people in that whole cabinet.
Yeah. Basically bought her goddamn position.
Yep.
And everybody fucking knows it.
Yep.
Yeah. She admits it.
Yeah.
One of the saddest things I saw, a picture of DeVos up there. There's a white guy next to her. It looked like Feeny. Mr. Feeny. It's like, what the hell is he doing here? Okay, yeah, here's the picture.
Like, from Mr. Rogers?
No, from Boy Meets World.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, oh God, I was going way back.
It's the white guy to her right.
As a slight aside, we don't have this on the notes, but I'll mention it anyway. Twitch, starting Monday, will be marathoning all 800 and some episodes of Mr. Rogers, so.
Aww.
Yay!
Yeah.
Oh my God, he does look like that teacher.
You can see Mr. Rogers' age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Those were our assholes and heroes of the week, folks. All right. Buckle up, because we're fixing to give you guys a history lesson. Are we ready for this?
Okay. Oh, boy.
What have we been doing through this episode?
It keeps repeating itself, history does.
Okay. So, what we're about to talk about directly ties back into all the shit we just mentioned. And you're going to find out why. Because this week specifically, a lot of people who actually lived through that shit, this shit, started having some serious cases of deja vu. And it was specifically about probably one of the most disgraceful incidents in American political history. Based around a ironic, quixotic, and extremely paranoid individual, drunk on power, and essentially absolutely convinced that everybody on the planet is out to get him. It is about how one man and a small group of loyalists did anything and everything they possibly could to make sure that this man's crimes never went public. And when it finally did, it completely destroyed the credibility of the professional establishment politician in the United States forever. We're talking, of course, about the infamous, the famous, the Watergate scandal. So this happened back in the 70s, and it has been the subject of films, books, tell-alls and exposés by pretty much every individual that was in at least some small way involved in it. The actions that were taken and the ramifications of it altered the American political landscape forever. And before we get to the actual meat of it, you need to know a quick bit about the players, specifically the four subject individuals. The first one was none other than the 37th president of the United States, Richard Milhouse Nixon. Now, Richard Nixon had essentially based at this point. Now, okay, so first thing you need to know is by the time all this shit came out, the Richard Nixon who, because it's really hard to remember this, but there was actually a time when Richard Nixon was actually pretty popular. He was a fairly hardcore right-wing Republican who actually governed from the center. He gave us the EPA. He was trying to implement something that is essentially universal health care. Of course, he also gave us the war on drugs.
Yeah.
And a shit ton of other things. This is also during the latter half and the closing days of the Vietnam War, which Richard Nixon basically inherited from Lyndon Baines Johnson. Well, I say inherited. That shit had been going on since the late 50s. But basically his massive mishandling and misdirection and outright lying about the war was one of his ultimate downfalls. Specifically, what had to do with the revelations that came from a second gentleman, a gentleman by the name of Daniel Ellsberg. Daniel Ellsberg is the man who will forever be known as the man who gave us the Pentagon Papers. The Pentagon Papers were about 3,500 pages of what had previously been classified material that had been about essentially a survey of progress that had been going on in Vietnam that had come out in 1969. And it basically revealed that not only was everything in Vietnam going completely to shit, but that we were actively making the situation worse, but we had also murdered several innocent people in the process. Specifically about, Henry Kissinger basically getting them to carpet bomb the hell out of Cambodia and Laos and murdering a bunch of innocent people. And ultimately, part of the reason this ended up becoming revealed was because, one, he mailed it to, I think it was, was it WAPO or the New York Times? I can't remember.
It was WAPO.
And Senator Mike Gravel actually read pages of it publicly so that it could be put into the congressional record. Richard Nixon was very mad at Daniel Ellsberg. And you're going to find out how mad in just a second. The next person you need to know about, the third individual, who at the time was only thought of as a minor player, but was later revealed to be a massive, massive player years later. A gentleman by the name of William Mark Felt Sr., who was a special agent for the FBI and was the deputy director before he retired in 1973. He was ultimately one of the people that would bring this whole thing down, and you'll find out about it in a little bit. But just remember that name, Mark Felt. And finally, we have a group known as the Plumbers. For lack of a better description, the Plumbers were basically a group of, brown shirts. Basically a group of extra legal thugs that basically answered only to Nixon himself. And these guys would do everything from break-ins, character assassinations, threatening, bodily harm, all kinds of just really nasty shit in general.
As you do.
Probably the most infamous member of this group is a gentleman by the name of G. Gordon Liddy. You may have seen him on conservative media at some point. Yeah, he's one of these bastards. The fact that he's somehow not rotting in prison surprises everyone. Well, not really, as you'll find out later. So, the players, those four people, keep them in mind, because here we go. One of the things that the Plumbers were known for doing was basically the code name for all the really, really illegal bullshit that they would do. call, and it was essentially, it's believed to have been coined by Nixon himself, but basically it's what they called rat fucking. And amongst these, yeah, that is exactly what it was. It was basically the code name for all the horrible illegal shit that these guys would get up to. One of the most infamous, other than what we're about to talk about, involved was what became was actually their first task, which was when they broke into the office of Los Angeles psychiatrist Louis J. Fielding, who just so happened to be the psychiatrist of Daniel Ellsberg, trying to come up with some sort of evidence that maybe that Ellsberg was insane, that he was mentally unstable. Unfortunately, they couldn't find find the file, even though apparently later on Fielding himself would say that the file was in his office. So apparently they just kind of sucked at it. And that he actually found it on the floor the morning after the burglary. And quite clearly someone had gone through it. Hmm. So apparently these idiots didn't know what they had. And supposedly John Ehrlichman, who was a member of Nexus Cabinet, basically told him, as it's quoted, "We had one little operation. It's been aborted out in L.A., which I think is better that you don't know about." And ultimately, this bullshit would eventually mean that the case against Ellsberg would be dropped because of government misconduct. Supposedly, they were also the people who illegally looked into the infamous Ted Kennedy Chappaquiddick incident. You know, the one where he was drunk driving and drove off a bridge and killed the passenger. And supposedly, there's a bunch of other shit. But, you know, that was just the one thing of a bunch of shit that they got up into. And like I said, it was everything from break-ins to character assassination to, you know, threatening bodily harm over the phone. Real thuggish shit. Know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That was rat fucking. That's what they called it. Mm. And keep in mind, by this point, this is also the point around the time when Richard Nixon started tape recording everything, every conversation he had in the Oval Office. Mm. This is where the infamous shit where he starts talking about Jews and black people starts showing up.
Oh yeah, I heard that. I heard that on Last Week Tonight, where the marijuana episode, talking about how he taped himself talking about marijuana. The Jews were into the marijuana or something like that. I don't know what.
Yeah,
it was all ridiculous shit.
Real crazy shit. Yeah. And then infamously, finally, it would all come to a head at a place called the Watergate Hotel Complex. For those who don't know, the Watergate Hotel, which, by the way, as far as I know, is still around.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, it's still around. It's in the Foggy. It's a group of five buildings. It's in the Foggy Bottom neighborhood in Washington, D.C. It's about 10 acres. It's actually next to the JFK Center for the Performing Arts. It includes cooperative apartments, office building, the Watergate Hotel. And of course, a couple more cooperative apartments, and of course the Watergate office building, which, well, we'll get to that. Basically, what you need to know is it was this big hotel and office complex in Washington, D.C., which at the time was the headquarters for the Democratic National Committee. Now, something you need to realize for all of this shit we're about to talk about. In hindsight, Richard Nixon really didn't need to come up with – need to do all of this shit, because he was expected to pretty comfortably win re-election. Hmm. Remember, he was up against fucking George McGovern. Now, I like George McGovern, but George McGovern had basically – but by that time, the GOP's character assassination machine had done everything to convince the world that, you know, he was a commie-loving Stalin apologist. So Richard Nixon was apparently so goddamn paranoid about, you know, his chances against, you know, his opponent, that he ordered that the plumbers, specifically G. Gordon Liddy amongst them, to break into the office building that was at the Watergate Hotel. I mentioned it earlier. Mm-hmm. To basically wiretap the place. In fact, they even have the stuff has been preserved. The shit that they were trying to install there,
yeah,
is still around. They've got it in a museum in D.C. somewhere. Where all this shit, the transistor radio, the microphones, the walkie-talkies they were using, all this shit's been preserved. They wiretapped some of the phones. And then they got caught. Mm-hmm. Basically, in 1972, one of the security guards at the Watergate complex, who was a guy named Frank Willis, noticed that there was tape covering the latches on some of the doors in the complex. He followed this tape, and he saw that it was leading from the underground parking garage to several offices, which, by the way, happened to be many of the offices that where the DNC did their business. Now, he removed the tape at the time, thinking nothing of it. But then he came back an hour later and then discovered the doc had been retaped again. So then Will called the police. The police came, and five members of the plumbers were found inside the office and arrested. These gentlemen were Virgilio Gonzalez, Bernard Baker, James McCord, Eugenio Martinez, and Frank Sturgis, all of whom were charged with attempted burglary and attempted interception of telephone and other communications. They were indicted by a grand jury, including G. Gordon Liddy and his associate Edward E. Hunt for conspiracy, burglary, and violation of federal wiretapping laws. They were tried by a jury, and they were convicted in 1973. And the following I'm about to tell you comes direct from Wikipedia. On the morning of June 18th, 1972, G. Gordon Liddy called Jeb Magruder in Los Angeles and informed him that four men arrested with McCord were quote-unquote Cuban freedom fighters, whom Howard Hunt recruited. Initially, Nixon's organization and the White House quickly went to work to cover up the crime and any evidence that might have damaged the president and his reelection. All right. Holy shit. So basically, they did it. Mm-hmm. All right. So what did they do? Well, let's see. They went through the contents of the safe of Edward Howard Hunt's in Edward Howard Hunt's house. I mentioned him earlier incorrectly as E. Edward Hunt. It's E. Howard Hunt, one of the associates of Liddy. They actually got it and they destroyed it. Then Nixon's press secretary Ron Ziegler tried to brush off the man as a third rate burglary attempt. Then Nixon claimed that Dean, who was I'm trying to remember who he was. I think he was one of the main FBI guys. Basically, said that they had investigated it. The matter had been settled. And then Nixon had a press conference where he basically said, quote, "I can say categorically that no one in the White House staff, no one in this administration presently employed, was involved in this very bizarre incident." He then went congratulate Dean, saying, "The way you've handled it, it seems to me, has been very skillful, because you putting your fingers in the dikes every time that leaks have sprung here and sprung there." Then people started to notice some cashier's checks that were earmarked by the Nixon reelection campaign that was found in the bank accounts of one of the Watergate burglars. Now, further investigation by the FBI would reveal the team had thousands of dollars more to support their traveling expenses in the months leading up to their arrests. And it actually showed a direct link to the Finance Committee of the CRP. That was the committee to reelect the president that was attached to Nixon. And keep in mind, a lot of this stuff happened behind the scenes. We wouldn't find out about it until a long time afterwards, after all this shit broke open.
Yeah.
And then, thanks to investigative coverage by the Washington Post, Time Magazine, and the New York Times, it all broke open. Thanks mostly to two now very famous journalists, Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, both working for WAPO. As they were looking into the scandal, they were contacted by a gentleman, by an informer who met them, who called them and met them inside a shadowy parking garage in D.C., who called himself Deep Throat. Now, do I need to tell everybody what Deep Throat was?
No.
It was a porno.
Yeah.
It was a porno. It was like one of the biggest box office successes of all time. It started the whole porno chic craze in the 70s.
Yeah.
Everybody knew about it back then, so that's sort of why he picked that particular name. Years later, 33 years after the fact, in 2005, we found out who Deep Throat was. The previously mentioned William Mark Felt Sr., Deputy Director of the FBI, at a time making himself in great anonymity and at great risk to himself, he helped spill the details to Bernstein and Woodward, and he kept it hidden for 33 years. He wasn't the hero we wanted, but he was the hero we deserved. Movie references. Now, oh shit. And then after that, after all this shit came to light, oh, it just got worse. So as the congressional investigation seemed to be wrapping up with the imprisonment and sentencing of the five Watergate burglars and, of course, Liddy and the other guys, it got broader. Eventually, this would culminate in a time when they would eventually hire a special prosecutor to look into the whole business. Thing was, though, is that the special prosecutor still could be let go, not by Nixon himself, but could be let go by other members of the FBI. And it was specifically about when it was discovered, all the tapes that he'd been recording in the Oval Office. So he was basically trying to deliver a subpoena to President Nixon to reveal this shit. And of course, Nixon would go on record trying to say that, this is about, the confidentiality of the president and his private conversations. The people need to know if their president is a crook. I'm not a crook. That's where the infamous line comes from.
Mm.
And then he committed probably the one final act that finally was his final nail in the coffin. It was called, well, I'll tell you what it is. After a few Senate hearings, basically where the famous phrase, "What did the president know and when did he know it?" became public. And then, of course, the revelation of the tapes. And after, I'm trying to remember what his name was, Cox. I'm guessing he was the, hold on, I'm quit, just hold for editing. It was, Special Prosecutor Archibald Cox. That's who he was. He was the special prosecutor. Richard Nixon tried to have him fired. Now, he, of course, couldn't do it directly, so he basically had to rely on some of the other people. First, he tried to get Attorney General Elliot Richard to fire him. Elliot Richard declined, and he resigned. Then, he ordered Deputy Attorney General William Ruckelhaus to fire Archibald Cox. He refused, and he resigned. Actually, I think I got that backwards. It was first Ruckelshaus and then Richardson. I think I got those backwards. But then finally he had to go all the way down to the Solicitor General, who, by the way, was Robert Bork. Yeah, you might want to, if you ever get a chance, do a little independent research on that guy. He's a very special character.
Yeah.
So within the span of like 24 hours, he basically lost his attorney general and his deputy attorney general and some other people, basically having to go all the way down to the friggin' Solicitor General to fire Special Prosecutor Archibald Cox in what became infamously known to history as the Saturday Night Massacre. But by then, it was too late. The tapes had already started leaking out. And a year later, Nixon was gone. He resigned the presidency, effective noon of the following day. This was a year later. He, of course, did his famous little grandstanding when he was getting on the plane. You know, turning around, waving, giving the double peace sign bullshit.
Yeah.
And leaving behind him the absolutely destroyed credibility of the office of the United States presidency. So, what amongst all these other things have we learned? One thing, just because the president does it, doesn't mean that it's not illegal. Essentially, Richard Nixon had allowed his paranoia and his prejudices and his power-hungry nature to utterly destroy him over something that ultimately he didn't even need to worry about in the first place.
Yeah.
He managed to surround himself with a group of loyalists and sycophants that were willing to do anything and everything, legal or illegal, to make sure that their dear leader got his way.
Sound familiar? Yep.
And ultimately, he was destroyed by his own hubris.
Yeah.
And he was and his pride would not allow him to admit failure or admit defeat or wrongdoing until the 11th hour.
Yeah.
Ultimately, Nixon got off lucky because his successor, Gerald Ford, actually gave him a presidential pardon.
Otherwise, he could have been looking at treason.
Oh, he could have gone to jail for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
If not the fucking electric chair, because treason is a high crime, and it can actually get you killed.
Yeah.
It also basically destroyed the concept of a respectable establishment politician. Basically, every single successful elected president since then, since Gerald Ford, has basically tried to pull the quote-unquote outsider angle. Everyone, you know, keep in mind that the person who would be president after Ford was Georgia governor and former peanut farmer Jimmy Carter, who basically was able to sort of cash in on the fact that, you know, he was not part of the Washington establishment. Yeah. Of course, Ronald Reagan would pull the same shit after him. Of course, the same thing would happen with, you know, his successor, George Bush Sr., then Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, and finally our current president, Donald J. Trump, which leads us back to the current president.
Guess who was visiting Trump this week? Kissinger.
Yep.
Somebody a lot of people were amazed was still alive.
Yeah.
Oh, that pisses me off. That pisses me off that, firstly, he's still alive. Secondly, he's not in jail for life. And thirdly, that he's meeting with Trump.
Yeah. As we mentioned this week, James Comey, the guy who was the FBI director, who was in charge of investigating Trump, was let go. The third person in charge of investigating Trump in his Russia ties in basically 3 months.
Yeah.
When news of this broke this week, it was almost immediate the people, the correlation between this and Nixon's infamous Saturday Night Massacre. Because it was so goddamn suspicious. Now, Sally Yates, the first person, you know, letting her go was, you know, even though it was at the time that he was, and that she was trying to investigate the Russia ties, of course, she also was let go because she refused to follow through with his immigration order. That's infuriating, but at the same time, it's not unusual for incoming presidents to, you know, fire older. Yeah. So that's infuriating, but it's not suspicious. Then he charged, what was his name? Arjat. Who was the second guy?
Preet Bharara?
Yeah. He was let go. Now, he's kind of a minor player, but he also was in charge, well, not in charge, but involved in investigating the Russia ties. Now, again, that itself is suspicious, but this is only two people. You know, two is not a pattern, it's just a trend.
Yeah.
But then he fired James Comey. This is the third person in 3 months that he's let go. Now is the time that it's finally getting suspicious.
Yeah, especially now, when you've got people, every time he makes statements about it, you got other people saying, no, that's not how it went.
Yeah. Not only that, but then Trump went on Twitter and basically blackmailed him, or at least threatened it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then he's using that bullshit excuse of how he treated Hillary. How did fucking Trump treat Hillary during the goddamn election?
Mm-hmm. He's currently threatening to release the concession call for the 6-month anniversary of him getting elected.
Yeah.
That's how much he gives a damn about Hillary.
Yeah.
Well, the only reason he wants to do that is to inflate his ego again.
Yeah.
And even now, everyone from this last thing, this firing here, okay, mark my words, this is the nail in the coffin.
Oh, yeah.
This is the point where,
being lit.
Because what's going to happen is, if the people are smart, if the Democrats are smart, and the Republicans have any shred of a spine left, there's going to be calls, and eventually there will be a special prosecutor.
When you've got John McCain, the man with the least amount of spine in Washington, D.C., saying we should get a special investigator.
Yeah.
That's saying something.
And on top of that, there are already Democratic congressmen and representatives who are putting together the paperwork who want to get started on all the procedures for impeachment.
Good.
And once that special prosecutor comes in, if Trump is smart, he will resign and he will hightail it out of the country.
I wonder where he'll go. Wherever will he
Russia,
go?
Russia, probably.
Where will he be welcome?
Russia, because once that's – if he doesn't, if he takes the Nixon route and holds on fast to his pride and –
He
will go down. A lot of people will go down with him.
Yeah.
Fucking Jeff Sessions will go down with him. Mike Pence will probably go down with him.
The entire chain of succession.
Yeah.
Pretty much we'll be left with President Orrin Hatch. Because, you know, fucking Betsy DeVos will probably go down. Yep. Just a good chunk of the Trump administration will go down in flames, and probably at the behest of Trump, because he's probably the type of person to take a few people down with him.
Yeah, I saw CNN had some sort of list of various senators and representatives about what their stance is on getting a special investigator going. There's people like Mitch McConnell says, we shouldn't do that because it's blocking us doing any other work.
You're the fucking blocker in chief, goddammit.
You blocked the blocks.
So. He's the guy that complained about the Democrats being obstructionists after they've been obstructionists for nearly 8 years while Obama was in office.
So, folks, start good thing, your clocks. Oh, what's that?
Well, the only good thing is, unlike Nixon era, this shit has happened a lot faster than it did back then. Because
the Watergate thing took like three or 4 years.
Yeah,
of constant work by a lot of people.
Yeah,
Trump's only been president for about 6 months.
Yeah. And with the way we have things today, shit comes out really fast. Like, usually the same day that it happens, we hear about it.
And the good thing is, next week, the Senate Intelligence Committee is going to have another hearing featuring one James Comey.
Actually, they announced that that's not going to happen. Oh. But here's the thing, though. That's actually a good thing, because that hearing is actually a closed hearing. Apparently Comey has basically been talking with a shit ton of his lawyers. I wouldn't be surprised at this point if he doesn't go to the toilet without two lawyers on the phone. And what he's trying to do, what's probably going to end up happening, is they're actually going to release a subpoena. And if that happens, that means there will be another hearing, and that one will have to be public.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if that happens, and if James Comey actually has anything, there's going to be some fucking fireworks in Washington. I can guarantee fucking you that.
Yeah.
This gun be good.
Yeah.
That's why Trump should be saying things like, don't be leaking anything to the media or else I'll get some tapes. Or whatever the hell he's been doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah.
All right. So that was Watergate, folks. Get prepared for another one. Because it's coming.
Yep.
All right. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. We're probably going to run a little long tonight, so.
Yeah. Just go as long as we can, I suppose.
It's just all right. So, in good political news, Marine Le Pen of the Front National lost her election in France.
By a very big margin.
Yep.
By a very, very large. Landslide. It was 65% to 35%. That is literally 2-1.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess
it wasn't even fucking close. And
another statistic that matters. 75% voter turnout.
Yeah.
Yep.
That was apparently their worst in quite a while.
Yeah. Because
usually like 15% or so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
15% not showing up.
Not showing up. But partly it was due to the choices between, Macron and Le Pen. Le Pen because, she's fucking Le Pen, and Macron because he's kind of a centrist liberal establishment type, former banker.
He doesn't have much experience in politics. So it's kind of similar to here where the two weren't the ideal candidates, but France actually showed up and voted anyway for the right person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Had it been someone like, I don't know, not Macron, but some of the other guys, the turnout would have probably been even higher. Mm-hmm. And Le Pen would have gotten her ass handed to her even worse.
Yeah.
You see, they survived the heck.
Yep, they did.
Jeez, I wonder who did that.
Oh, it was the Russians. It was the fucking Russians. It's always the fucking Russians.
Now, I want to say the Macron's party, which the whole crazy thing about Macron winning is his party is brand new.
Yeah, it's basically a centrist liberal party.
Yeah.
Of course, keep in mind that in European context, centrist liberal is basically to the left of Mao Zedong in the United States.
Yeah, and what I saw is that they planted fake things amongst their files so they could tell if that's what leaked.
Yeah.
Yep.
So they kind of.
And the thing is, Macron actually didn't panic. He literally just brushed it off.
Yeah.
Well, from what I saw, people looking through it, it's like there wasn't anything there. But obviously, people that want to find something found whatever they wanted and obsessed about it.
And it ultimately didn't matter because she still lost.
Yeah.
Well, there were also the media.
And you know, oh man, Kekistan was pissed off that night because you go to anywhere in YouTube and anything remotely political, and there was just a bunch of pissed off
the Donald
4chan assholes.
Yeah.
He's constantly talking about Muslims and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Shit on them all nights. And what I found funny is the media, when the hack happens in France, decided we're not going to jump on this right now.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna let it go, they actually have like a – well, the day before the election, they have like a 24-hour media blackout by law.
Yeah.
Just so that they can't – there can't be any last-minute thing to influence the election.
Yeah.
Gee, that would have been nice.
Yeah. Unlike the U.S., it has a 24-second filing deadline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think part of it was also to vet the things that were in it. Mm-hmm. See if anything actually mattered.
Hang on here. Fact checking. No. Just no.
All right. So, also this happened. For the second time, John Oliver somehow managed to crash the SEC site. After he did another net neutrality episode, and
yeah, I was specifically watching this, and he makes fun of Ajit Pai's dumb Reese's peanut butter cup mug.
Mm-hmm.
So he has just a giant version of it. He said it's filled with the blood of smaller bugs.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of talks about the ridiculous site process at the end of. How you go onto their site and leave feedback on this particular issue.
Mm-hmm.
And said, you know what? Instead of that, we just set up our own site, go FCC yourself. It'll take you right to the page where you can comment.
Mm-hmm.
And
it went
shortly
boom.
After, everybody that was watching decided to go to the website, and it crashed.
Yep. Oopsie! Homepage go boom.
Yep.
Yep. Working now, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
And let's just hope they got their fucking message across.
Oh, it's not.
But, yeah. Then, just today, well, not today, this week, a few miners in Canada actually discovered the single best preserved dinosaur fossil that has ever been found. Have you guys seen this thing?
It looks amazing.
I thought it was fucking fake at first.
Really?
It looks almost too good. But yeah, it's 100% authentic as far as anyone knows. It was found back in 2011. And
it basically had an undersea burial.
Yeah. And it was finally, basically it was revealed to the world, I guess this week. Because yeah. I guess they wanted to, like, clean it up and basically make sure it was authentic and all this stuff.
Yeah, they found it in 2011.
Holy
crap. Yeah, and I guess they spent the next few years trying to – well, they had to kind of put – well, they originally found it in 2011. I think what happened is they first found a piece of it, and then they had to excavate the rest of it
because
mm-hmm. yeah. it was underwater. And they had to keep it in safekeeping. They had to put it back together. Then they also had to, you know, carbon date it and make sure all this stuff, you know, dot their P's and Q's. Because, like I said, it's so good you'd think it was fake, but it's totally not. It is 100% real. Look at this thing.
Wow, look at the skin.
Yeah.
I want picture number 7 of the slideshow.
Yeah, it's a nutosaur. Nutosaur.
Did it live in the water?
Weighed nearly 3,000 pounds. I don't think it was a water animal because it had
it was a herbivore.
Very heavy armor.
Yeah. Okay.
It was a herbivore.
And that's
the armor is usually
from like an ankylosaur.
Yeah. Ankylosaurs have like the little club at the end of their tails.
Yeah.
And
so,
they also got heavy armor on them too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just it's a herbivore, and you know, as a lot of paleontologists will tell you, you can usually tell one of the sort of key signs of whether or not one of these dinosaurs are herbivores if they have a lot of armor on them.
Mm-hmm.
because Stegosaurus, Triceratops, all the same thing.
Yeah.
But I swear, if you looked at this thing, you'd think it was like some sort of like promotional material for Skyrim or something, because it looks that damn good.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, this is a fairly newfound species of Nodosaur, a type of Ankylosaur, often overshadowed by its Cereobox famous cousins in the subgroup, Ankylosauridae.
Yeah,
and they have no shin-splitting tail clubs, but they two-wielded thorny armor to deter predators.
Mm-hmm.
110 million to 112 million years ago, midway through the Cretaceous period. They were the rhinoceros of its day, a grumpy herbivore that largely kept to itself. If something did come calling, perhaps the fearsome Acrocanthosaurus, the Nodosaur had just the trick. Two 20-inch-long spikes jutting out of its shoulders like it's a misplaced pair of bull's horns.
Mm-hmm.
Those fucking Wolverine dinosaur.
And it was all... Here's the thing. It's also... There is no... controversy on whether or not, you know, this thing had feathers or something, because you can look at it. This thing is 100% fucking reptile.
Yeah, that's very, very clear.
Yeah, and this is the stuff that was up in Canada back then.
Yep. That's so, awesome. But yeah, fucking hell. Even back in the dinosaur era, Canadians were, you know, polite and kept to themselves. God damn.
Yeah, let's see. They think it either ended up dead in the river or swept in it by a flood.
Mm-hmm.
It was a belly-up carcass.
Mm.
So it might have just been floating down a river or whatever.
Probably.
Kept afloat by gases that bacteria belched into its body cavity, eventually washed out into the seaway, scientists surmise.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, and oh god, just... Oh, these people are a bunch of fucking nerds. there was recently a new species of Ankylosaur that has been categorized, and they officially named it Zool Destroyer of Shins.
Yeah, the scientific name is Crurivastator. Crurivastator, which is Latin for Destroyer of Shins.
Yep.
Because they figured out it probably swung a thing at T-Rex and hit it in the shins.
Dorks!
Yeah, they named it Zool because the skull fossil they have looks like Zool from the Ghostbusters.
It does.
Yeah,
it does.
And the Twitter feed on this thing, they actually invited Dan Aykroyd in to come take a look at it.
Yeah.
They found Zool. Oh dear.
I am the key master. Are you the gatekeeper?
Yeah.
Yeah, he said I had really wanted to use that name for a long time. Saving it for a specimen with a really well preserved tail. I wasn't going to get a better choice than with this fellow.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, some of the other names they have for different Ankylosaur species, there's Crichton Pelda, named after the Jurassic Park author, and the Greek word for a small shield.
Mm-hmm.
Zara Pelta, named after the Mongolian word for hedgehog.
Mm-hmm.
And Zia Pelta, after the Zia people of New Mexico.
Mm. All right, well, we got more dinosaur news. So back in 1996, National Geographic put out an issue of their magazine, which featured a baby dinosaur, a tiny dinosaur that was found curled inside of its egg, and they called it Baby Louie. You know, obviously it was a fossil, but it was there. They got a picture of it here where we clicked it. And 20 years after the fact, they figured out Baby Louie is actually a completely new species, previously undiscovered species of dinosaur.
Yes, Gigantoraptor.
Yep.
Gigantoraptor.
It's a giant oviraptor.
Yeah, it's basically a giant chicken with scales.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they were having problems trying to figure out what it was because they said it's like an Oviraptor, but the egg is about 8 to 10 times larger than any known baby Oviraptor. It's like, well,
and
they found
the name
another
that
skeleton.
Given, yeah.
They found another skeleton of one of these things. Like, well, okay, so this is just a giant version of these things that actually existed. So they named it Baby Long.
Yep.
Which
it
is
now known as Baby Dragon.
Hmm. Yeah, Baby Long Sinensis, which is Chinese for baby dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And looks like a, what they call a gigantic cassowary, like dinosaur that laid its eggs and laid on the eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, Chris, you realize that all of these dinosaur fossils were put there by Satan just to test our faith.
Especially if they're in China.
There really are fucking people that believe that.
Yes.
One or two of them are in my goddamn family. All right. Oh, God. This next just... You know how people have... You ever heard a person drink a really bad beer and describe it as tasting like horse piss? It's, you
well,
know,
there's the, there's that one beer brand in Grand Theft Auto called Pissvasser.
Yeah. Well, a Danish brewery have created a beer that is actually fertilized with human urine called Pisner.
That is not okay.
They got it from a rock festival, too. 50,000 liters of urine.
No, we in fact do not need this.
Right now, and you too can get a share of the herpes.
Wow. That's, trying to figure out a justification for this, I can't. I just can't.
I like the head to explain that Pilsner is a wordplay combining Pilsner and piss.
No, we figured that out. That's not what
mostly
we explain.
Because a lot of us have drunk Pilsner and it already tastes like piss. But...
Yeah. Word.
Yeah. What you have to explain is why.
And yeah, why?
Contain the human urine. They used it on the fields of barley to fertilize.
Oh, so they used it like a fertilizer. Yeah, well, that's, of course they said it was fertilized. Okay, that itself is not so bad.
Yeah, they say still... it doesn't taste like urine. Wait,
why didn't they just
hold
it
as drinking
pills?
I would put it down, but you don't even notice. That's what they say.
Well,
of course it doesn't taste like piss, otherwise you'd actually be drinking Pilsner.
Well, the Russians are going to have to
I am not fucking letting that go.
By the field and say, if you have to go, go over here.
I think one of us is going to have to find a bottle of this.
Oh, God damn it.
I think one of us can't pee in a field.
Well, by the time it's brewed and all that stuff, you're not going to notice it anyway. So, anyways.
All right. So next up, we got a little bit of music news. Specifically, a band I'm actually shocked is not only still around, but still relatively popular. Considering what
album.
A fucking, considering what a fucking joke they were when I was a kid. Linkin Park.
Yeah.
Back in the day when there was like a byword for like angsty emo lyrics, Linkin Park was like the goddamn, you know, the poster child, you know. Basically, their vocalist, Chester Bennington. God damn, that name just fits. Yeah. He basically wishes that all of their fans would just fucking move on from hybrid theory.
I agree with him.
So, hybrid theory.
Their debut album.
So, yeah, it was their first album. It's where fucking...
Crawling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. crawling in my skin. God, that album is so...
Not one of the high points of that album.
No. It's also where, what was it, Closer to the Edge?
Mm-hmm.
One Step Closer, yeah.
One Step Closer. That was their debut.
That was early 2000s. The one that made new metal.
Yeah. God. You know what? We need to, like, do an episode on that genre. Because,
on new metal, yeah.
Because that whole... That was basically what hard rock was in the U.S. for, like, half a decade. And it was... Yeah, looking back, it was fucking embarrassing.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, it really was just an element of its time.
Yeah.
And, you know, back then, things were pretty fucked up. So you ended up with stuff like
that. We had a lot to get out of our systems.
Yeah, and it was a debut album. It was their first effort. Their second one was better, Meteora.
Oh, yeah, their second album's actually pretty good.
I'm a big fan of their first three albums, and then I think it kind of went to hell.
Thousand Suns?
Yeah.
Yeah, they tried to make a concept album, and it just came off as way too goddamn pretentious. So,
well, you guys did hear, like, this summer, they're touring with Blink-182, and the tour is called Blinkin' Park.
Oh, my God.
I'm not shitting you guys.
No. The amazing thing about that is how old all those people are now.
Another band from my youth that I cannot remember is still around and actually still relatively popular.
Yeah, and still making music.
Blink-182 were like the fucking... Blink-182 was like up there with, like, you know, Simple Plan as like being just the fucking joke of the pop punk genre.
I think the thing that helped them is they didn't take themselves seriously.
They were more comedic.
Does.
You know, and then Simple Plan had, you know, fucking, how could this happen to me?
It's every one of those pop punk bands all sound the same. They have vocals that all sounds exactly the same. Yeah. So it's very hard to figure out what you're actually listening to. So
the Blink-182 guys, at least I guess it's just one that's still around. At this point, he's in his late 40s. That's crazy to think about. Yeah, still playing the same kind of music.
Pop punk music.
Though their style has matured a little bit.
Yeah.
It's not the same kind. It's more like what their self-titled album.
Yeah.
At least like
what, and that's what I think Chester Bennington is getting at.
Yeah.
Want to mature a little bit.
Yeah. Like, I mean, because back when I was a kid, Blink-182 was known for, you know, that one song that showed up all the goddamn time on TRL.
Is one of them.
By the way, there used to be a thing on MTV called TRL. Did you know that, kids?
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, we watched that back videos on TV. We found out the new stuff that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you know fucking Guns N' Roses was actually on the TRL at one point?
Really?
I did not.
I mean, they weren't there live, but they came out. It was right around the time they had released, it was like a best of live collection, and it was,
So it was right around the time that Axl was alienating the whole world.
Yeah, it was right around like 1999, 2000, sometime around that.
Oh yeah, because it already alienated everybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Mark Hoppus is 45. Travis Barker, 41. Chester Bennington is 41, just in case.
Yeah.
His quote here is, when we made Hybrid Theory, I was the oldest guy in the band and in my early 20s. That's why I guess I'm like, why are we still talking about Hybrid Theory? It's fucking years ago. Yeah. It's a great record. We love it. Like, move the fuck on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm going to have to listen to their new album on Groove later, see if it's any good.
Oh, God, right, they're touring with Machine Gun Kelly, which is a Cleveland white rapper.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Does stuff with the Cavs all the time.
Mm. All right, so we got some movie news. And once again, we're having one of those things about whitewashing, you know, where a white actor plays an Asian character. Ghost in the Shell.
At least that's fictional.
Yeah, well, Ghost in the Shell, I'll point it out, they actually tried to explain why they did that in the movie as a plot point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It didn't. It
basically capitalize
good.
On the Android part of the
yeah,
whole equation.
But, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's still dumb. So.
Well, it was announced that Zach McGowan, who of course is on Shameless, is going to be playing, he's going to be in the new Nihal movie. Which, by the way, for those of you who don't know, he's going to be playing a gentleman by the name of Ben Conahale, or Benahakak. I'm very bad with these Hawaiian names, but it was Ben Conahale, who was a Hawaiian native who was a war hero during the Second World War. Like I said, he was a Hawaiian native.
Yeah. Yeah, he looks like he's dark-skinned from these photos, so they're black and white, so it's not 100%
evil. And so who else could they get to play him but fucking Zach McGowan?
I don't know. Almost anybody
I don't know, you could get Jason Momoa.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of Hawaiian or Pacific Islander actors out there. There's The Rock.
No. Look, he doesn't necessarily have to be from Hawaii, as long as they're Samoan, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, the guy could actually be fucking, Maori or, from Pacific Islands, somewhere American Samoa. Just somebody who is a fucking Pacific Island native.
You know why he's the lead role on this? Mm-hmm. He's the executive producer.
Oh, fuck you.
He signed on as the executive producer. I'm guessing as long as he could play the lead role.
Yeah, that's stupid. So, I'm out.
Yeah,
I'm dick move.
Dick move. Dick move.
Yeah.
In other movie news, we found out that there's actually going to be a Hellboy reboot.
We touched on this a while back, but.
But obviously, neither Ron Perlman nor Del Toro are going to. Going to be involved.
Do we want?
Don't know.
I think we have to see how it looks.
Yeah.
Neil Marshall is going to be directing it.
Yeah.
Who did The Descent and some stuff on the Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
The working title is Hellboy Rise of the Blood Queen. Let's see. And tap for the lead role of Hellboy is David Harbour of Stranger Things, which could be a good choice.
Okay.
I'll give it all right, well, the doubt.
Unlike the previous movie we just talked about, we'll actually give this movie the benefit of the doubt. So,
yeah.
Furthermore, coming up, we've also discovered that, as everybody knows, there's going to be an animated Deadpool show on FX.
Yes, FXXX.
FXX, and we discovered who's going to be the showrunner.
Oh?
Donald Glover.
He's got work going. He's going to be the new Lando Calrissian. He's helming this show.
This could work. I think this could actually work.
And he's writing it with his brother. What else? They're going to executive produce the show and serve as showrunners. Animated adult action comedy series.
Yeah. I want to see a Deadpool animated series done well.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't want it to turn into fucking Family Guy.
Yeah. Because that would be stupid.
Fortunately, Donald Glover I trust. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
We know. We've seen his previous work. We know he's good at it.
Yeah.
So. I'm not as worried.
Yeah.
And I guess
build it on the Deadpool series that kicked off in 1996, and it could be golden.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So finally.
And finally, the big movie reveal of the week, the long, long, long awaited sequel to the original 1980s cult classic Blade Runner. Blade Runner 2049 coming out. Trailer was revealed, and it looks awesome.
Yeah, it actually does look genuinely amazing.
Yep.
Harrison Ford, still there.
Yeah. He's a side character, but yeah, he's still there.
Yeah.
And whether or not we'll actually find out if he is or is not a replicant.
A lot of people would be very unhappy if they find out that he is, even though they pretty much know that he is. But anyways.
People would be unhappy either way. It's a lose-lose situation.
Yeah, it's true. It doesn't matter. People will be unhappy if, like, the sun rises. That's just going to happen.
Needs an excuse to bitch.
Yeah.
Is he going to survive?
By the way,
no, I don't think he survives.
Probably not.
He's going to pull a Star Wars again and say, fucking just pay me, I want to be out of this.
Yeah.
Just if he is a replicant,
then no, he's not going to survive it.
Oh yeah, we're going to find out if Indiana Jones survives the next movie.
That's true. This will make for an interesting
path. They nearly had the opportunity to pass the torch, but then it had to be Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah. That was not good.
Yeah. Well, anyway, this new Blade Runner, it looks good.
Yeah, watch the trailer. Just our descriptions don't really do it justice. Just
and then watch the original. Watch
yeah.
You know, the director's cut. The way it's meant to be seen.
That's one of those movies that comes with like five versions of it on the Blu-ray disc.
Yeah, because of all the fucking executive meddling.
Yeah. Yeah, I could get into how they actually do that on a Blu-ray, but that's a topic for another discussion.
Yeah. But in the meanwhile, we have officially got a show.
Yes, we do. Yes.
And, folks, I don't know what's going to be happening in the weeks to come, but Donald Trump is fucking going down, and he is going to go down in the most spectacular fashion. So,
and he's recording it all on Twitter.
Yeah, stay tuned, folks. It's going to be a wild ride. Yeah. So,
folding chair.
I would like to remind all our listeners, if you want to write into the show, ask us a question, have something you want us to read on the air, you can contact us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. Also, you can download and listen to our lovely little cast here on iTunes, Google Play, RSS, and a shit ton of other formats I can't think of off the top of my head at this exact moment.
Radio, Pocket Cast.
Yeah, we're all over the place.
Yes, and as we found out recently, our listenership is in fact growing. So, join the army. Our army. Not the actual army. I wouldn't recommend that one right now. It's I have a family who's in the Navy right now, and it kind of sucks.
Yeah.
So, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Theresa Sammons, and Chris Deloge, I would like to say, hey, good night, get some sleep out there, don't go rat fucking.